Blog Talk Radio.
Tonight is a particular honor for me because, let's face it, my presence on this stage is pretty unlikely. My father was a foreign student, born and raised in a small village in Kenya. He grew up herding goats, went to school in a tin roof shack. His father, my grandfather, was a cook.
Welcome to Current Events with Patrick Cook. I'm your host, Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas, as I do every Sunday at 4 p.m. Central Time, 5 o'clock Eastern. We are the number one resource for small business and nonprofits. To learn how you can showcase your business or nonprofit, go to our website at TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com for details. We have a great show in store for you today. So I'd like to say hello to everyone tuning in from Australia, Asia, Africa, Antarctica, Europe, and of course, North and South America. Jima and I are excited to be with you once again. So let's take a look at what's on tap. Of course, we will be talking about Whitney Houston's death. Yes, indeed. We also look at Cornel West's statements about Melissa Harris Perry. We look at Roland Martin's punishment, if you will, about some tweet remarks he made. And we look at much, much more. So sound the alarm. Get on Facebook, Twitter, Foursquare, or Tumblr. Send out emails and text messages. Call your friends and family and tell them to tune in right now to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. And for those of you that are listening via Blog Talk Radio, leave your comments, click the follow button, or follow me on Twitter, and that's at TaylorMade101. And of course, I'll be reading your tweets live on the air. I also want to mention that I have a chat room open. Out there in the chat room, of course, you can leave your comments or ask questions. So whatever your pleasure, chat room, Twitter, Facebook, or just plain old my bell, we want to hear from you. But first, let's take a look at our current events. Okay, first up, I don't know if you've heard this, but this is breaking. If you're just joining us, Bobby Christina has been rushed to the hospital. That's right. The daughter of the recently deceased Whitney Houston has been rushed to an L.A. area hospital. Now, this is fresh off of CBS's news webpage. So CBS's news is reporting this right now. This is just coming in. Bobby Christina Brown, only child of the late singer Whitney Houston, has been rushed to an L.A. area hospital. Now, this has been confirmed by KCBS. Now, the report says Bobby Christina, 18, had been staying at the Beverly Hilton. Of course, this is the same hotel where her mother had registered to stay for a pre-Grammy party Saturday night. Now, Beverly Hills police confirmed to KCBS that Bobby Christina was transported at 10:30 a.m. Pacific time to Cedars-Sinai Medical Center. A Beverly Hills Police Department watched commander told CBS that Bobby Christina was treated for anxiety at the scene. Now, CBS's 2's Joy Benedict was on scene when Brown was taken. Now, according to Benedict, the team was with 3 young men who were clearly distraught. They rushed to their car to follow the ambulance, Benedict said. Now, Benedict also told the police that Brown is expected to be okay, And Houston was pronounced dead Saturday afternoon in her room on the fourth floor of the Beverly Hilton. She had been planning to attend a party that night at, of course, the Hilton. There were no obvious signs of any criminal intent, said the Beverly Hills police about Whitney. But again, if you're just tuning in, Barbara Christina has been rushed to the hospital. And so this is what CBS is reporting just right now. This is hot off the press. So speaking of Whitney Houston, by now I'm sure you have heard that Whitney Houston has died. This is no secret now. I know it's hard to believe, and I think most of the nation is still in shock over the news. Now, if you haven't heard the details, I would encourage you to visit the Reuters website. Here's what they had to say. The pop superstar died on the eve of the Grammy Awards in Los Angeles at the same hotel where her mentor, record mogul Clive Davis, was holding an annual pre-event party featuring scores of music industry celebrities. A dramatic scene unfolded at the Beverly Hilton Hotel as guests arriving for the party expressed shock at her death while reporters swarmed the hotels. Fans gathered outside to light candles in her memory, and helicopters hovered overhead. Beverly Hills police said that they were called to the Beverly Hilton at around 3:43 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, and fire department personnel who were already at the location responded immediately. Houston was in her fourth floor room but was unresponsive to CPR, and she was pronounced dead at 3:55 p.m. Now, she was she had been positively identified by friends and family who were at her hotel, and next of kin have already been notified. Now, Lieutenant Mark Rosen told reporters, police said that there was no obvious signs of criminal intent. Los Angeles County coroners removed Houston's body from the hotel after midnight through a back door to avoid the crush of media set up to cover her shocking death. Now, typically, coroners conduct an autopsy within a day or two, at which point they might release some preliminary information about the death. If drugs or alcohol were involved or are involved, however, an official cause of death will not be released until after toxicology tests, which takes about 6 to 8 weeks. Now, of course, we all know that it is uncertain what the cause of death was or is at this time. And most of us, I'm sure, we pray that anything but drugs will give us some relief that she died not because of that habit, if you will. We were all rooting for Whitney, too. If you recall her singing with Kim Burrell at the BET Gospel Celebration, I know I was really moved by that because it seems to me that she was coming back around. But at any rate, I can almost guarantee at the Grammy Awards tonight, there will not be a dry eye when Jennifer Hudson pays a special tribute to her. Now, we all know when Jennifer reaches way down like she did in Dreamgirls, it will effectively eulogize Whitney Houston in front of a weeping nation. Now, we're going to take a quick break. And we're going to open up the phone lines and, of course, take your calls. And I want to know what happened to Whitney. I want to hear from you. Did we fail Whitney? How did she get to that very dark place? She was a very spiritual person. How did she get to that very dark place? You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. We'll return in just a moment.
I'm lost without a cause. After giving it my all, winter storms have darken my soul. And after all that I've been through, who on earth can I turn to? I look to you. In you I can be strong. I look to you. I look to you. Hey, and when melodies are gone, it's in you.
And we love you, Whitney Houston.
Cook Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our company's tailor-made training and consulting, current events, and AskGMA can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for discounted books for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Thank you for your call. Let me read you a couple of my Twitter family, and then I'll have you respond, Dr. Hutchinson. But I want to read the first one from one of my best Twitter family members, Ask Jima. And Ask Jima says, Reverend Al, today is my birthday, and I'm sitting in Barnes & Noble Starbucks watching you online, driving people around me crazy. And I want to wave at her and the folks she's driving crazy and wish her a happy birthday on her 21st birthday. That's my friend. And of course, my East Boone friend.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. In just a few minutes, we are going to open up the phone lines. But before we do that, I want to bring on my co-host. Now, of course, I introduce to some and present to others, Jima Hill Cook. Jima, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Now, first off, let me ask you, how did that rendition of Whitney and Kim Burrell singing I Look to You, how did that make you feel?
Well, I mean, when I first heard the song in the beginning, I always thought it was a very inspiring song. So to hear Kim Burrell do it, who just has her own unique way of owning a song herself, as does Whitney. So to hear these two, you know, songbirds, really, angelic voices come together and sing such an inspiring song, it always just lifts me up and gives me something else to hold on to. So it was great.
Yeah, I have to admit, every time I hear those two together, the spirit just really moves within me. And I always, you know, now go back to that moment when I think of Houston, Whitney Houston, because of it's always that light in her that we all know her to have it within her. And so for her to be in this dark place a lot of the times really is it's disturbing. So I think that's why so many people were shocked by the news. And speaking of shocked by the news, how did you feel when you first heard it?
I was shocked. I was sad. And I think sad more than anything, because I feel as though, Whitney was 5 years older than I am. So it's like I grew up with Whitney. And, it's like every part of my life, there's a Whitney song almost, you know, especially in my adult life. So there's just something, it hit me in a place that I hadn't been hit in a while, in terms of by someone that, you know, I really didn't know but felt like I knew. It was even a complete different feeling from when Michael Jackson died. It was different for me. And it still is. I mean, it's still hard to say and hear and recognize that Whitney is no longer with us in body. We know she's, you know, with us in spirit. But and just, you know, reminiscing over all the songs and seeing all the videos and different things of that nature. But I was saddened. And not because of the why. I was just saddened that she had passed. And I don't necessarily know if I really want to know how she died. The fact that she's no longer here is sad enough for me. But as I wrote in my blog, I know she's now singing in another choir. So and she's joined her rightful place with the angels because she had such an angelic voice, and when she came onto the scene, she dominated. She overtook it. There will be no other Whitney. I mean, there would not be another female artist that would sell the amount of records that Whitney Houston did ever. So she will go down and has gone down and will continue to be in those history books. But I was saddened. I was shocked. I was, and then I got angry because then you hear all the negativity come out in terms of her life. And so then I got mad. And even didn't even talk to a couple people because I didn't want to hear their negative nonsense. So I wanted to remember her like I wanted to remember her.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting that you say the fact that you're not concerned about the why. And I think that sentiment is expressed in a lot of people. You know, I said early in my opening that it's uncertain what caused the death. But most people are praying it was not drugs. Most people are praying it was not something that was self-inflicted. It was most people are praying that, you know, it was a natural cause type of situation as opposed to any other thing. And so I think most people would feel the way or express the sentiments that you did about not really knowing the why, because they want to remember her in the purest form as they can, because you know, the fact of the matter is she was like our cousin. You know, I mean, it's like we knew her. It's like she was a part of the family. And that's why when I talk about when I seen her on the BET Gospel Awards, that it seemed like to me that she was getting better. And so I felt like my cousin was doing better. She's been, you know, down or been sick for a while, but she was doing better. So I think a lot of people express that same sentiment. But I want to echo something you also said about there would be another Whitney. She sold all these records. And I raised that issue because Simon Cowell said that, you know, even during the talent shows he's been doing for many, many years, the American Idol show, the benchmark that all women wanted to sing was Whitney Houston. That tells you right there how significant she was in this industry.
Right. Right, there was no other person whose songs were sang at American Idol, X Factor, any of those type of shows where there's singing involved than Whitney Houston. Everybody wanted to, you know, to be the next Whitney and would try their hand at singing a Whitney Houston song. So that tells you, you know, how she captured an audience and grew such a strong fan base of people from all walks of life. Whitney really transcended color. She transcended economic status. She was that girl, you know, that it girl that could hang with the boys and, you know, hang in the hood, but she could sit in the room and be just as prim and proper. And so, you know, that's what we liked about her, because she could fit. She fit in anywhere she went. She didn't seem like she was out of place, and that's what endeared her to a lot of her fans.
Yeah, I have to agree with you. I want to, if you're just joining us, I also want to let our listening audience out there know that Bobby Christina has been rushed to the hospital. CBS News is reporting that Bobby Christina, the only child of the late singer Whitney Houston, has been rushed to an L.A. area hospital. Now, of course, she was 18, and the report is saying that she had been staying at the Beverly Hilton, the same hotel where her mother had been registered. But Beverly Hills police confirmed to KCBS that Bobby Christina has been transported to the hospital around 10:30 Pacific time. So, Jimmy, what do you make of Bobby going to the hospital at this time?
Oh, well, I probably would have been in the hospital last night if something was happening to my mama. So, I mean, I can only imagine how she's feeling right now, and the type of relationship that, you know, I perceive them to have had. I would say she's probably devastated. You know, if the communications are true, and that at the time she wasn't allowed to go in and see her mom in the hotel before they took her out, I'm sure that was devastating. So I'm pretty sure whatever anxiety that she has right now is normal. Because like I stated, I can only imagine how I would be if something was to happen to my mother.
Yeah, I definitely understand. I remember most of the listening audience know that my father passed a little bit over 6 months ago. And, you know, it was the first time that something this close, a death this close happening to me and me understanding the dynamics that goes on when a death occurs in the family. You know, I had no idea the emotions, how strong the emotions run through people in different ways. I mean, there's anger, there's joy, there's sadness, there's a lot of different emotions that run through people and at different times. And I was really shocked by the nature of anger of a group of family members during this time, as well as I was shocked by other behaviors, you know, in that time. So I can understand definitely when you lose someone really close to you, how this wide range of emotions will go through the body. And I'm sure Christina, you know, had Bobby Christina had that anger initially that they wouldn't allow her to be in. Then the sadness fell in, and then now the anxiety. So yeah, this range of emotions could take a toll on anyone, especially a young 18-year-old girl as well. So, and I know it took a toll on me, so I can definitely understand. I want to shift the conversation now and maybe ask some hard questions, some questions that won't necessarily disgrace or degrade Whitney Houston, but I want to know, what do we think happened to her? I mean, because she had this, as you put it, this very angelic voice. She had this real spiritual foundation. And it seems like when you see her, she was very happy, you know, 80 to 90% of the times. So, Jima, you know, in your estimation, what do you think happened to her?
Well, I think it's a combination of things. I mean, Whitney was young when she first got into the business. She was yet a teenager herself. She broke barriers. She was the first African-American model on the front of a teen-wide magazine.
I think. I can't remember the name. What was it?
What was the magazine?
Say that again. I didn't hear your comment.
Oh, I said that Whitney, you know, broke down a lot of doors, and she was young when she got into the business. She was like a teenager. She's like 19 when she got in. So the fact that A, she got in at a young age. Two, she was the first African American model to cover a teen magazine. I think it was YM, if my memory serves me correct. And so she was young, and then to come in like she did and took over, she came out the gate taking over. It wasn't, you know, three albums later and then there's Whitney. You know, Whitney came out, and with that came pressure. And then she comes from a family that was already in the business with her mom and with, you know, with Dion and then with, you know, Aretha Franklin as her godmother. So she has been around, you know, royalty in this, you know, highest level as it related to the business. And so I just think, you know, the pressures of it all, you know, we don't live in the bubble. We don't live in that glass bubble like these entertainers do. And even back in Whitney's day, her heyday, it wasn't as bad as it is now with the 24-hour news cycle and the TMZs of the world. They have cameras everywhere. So, you know, just even then it was a bubble. So imagine that today, in today's time, it's like 10 times as worse as that. So, you know, when you think about living like that and having to be always on guard and always on point and always the courteous one and always the one to want to speak, you know, that has to stop what you're doing when you're eating dinner because some fan wants you to take a picture with them, you know, it weighs on you. And so when you're not in the bubble and you're at home and you want to relax, you really want to relax. You want to get away from it all. And I don't think we give them enough time to get away from it all.
So you think the fact that she I mean, to me, and let me say this first. to me, she had people that were in the industry that had experience. To me, she had the names you mentioned, Dionne Warwick. She had Clive Davis. She had her mom. She had a lot of people that were around her that really had her best interest in mind. But it looks like in a lot of cases she took she was an independent person as opposed to relying on that. So I want to get your take on the fact that she kind of strayed away from all of the people that protected her the most. What do you think about that?
Well, I don't necessarily know if she strayed away. She made up her mind on what she wanted to do. And I think sometimes we forget that, you know, people still have free will. And, you know, once again, this is a situation where we want to make a big sin and a little sin. And in reality of it, you know, when you're, you know, not acting in the best interest for you, then it's out of order. So although Whitney's issue was more public, I have the same sort of care and concern for Fantasia, who keeps, you know, messing around with married men and getting pregnant. And I have the same concern with Alicia Keys. That wasn't a very smart decision that she made, you know, but because it was just that and it wasn't some other decision. You know, we put people's decisions in categories, but at the end of the day, if it's not in the best interest of who you are and helping you get to the next level, then you need to rethink that. Whitney just made some conscious and maybe some subconscious decisions to do Whitney. You know, I mean, I believe she had a song from back in the day that said, you know, I'm a do me, basically.
That's an interesting perspective.
She knew that you know, I mean, how many of us have people in our families that know the perils of drugs? They know 9 times out of 10, there is nothing good going to come out of staying on drugs all the time. And although it looks like, you know, Snoop Dogg is getting away with it, he's not. You know, we may not see it, and it may not be in our lifetime, and he may not even recognize it, but it might not even come to him. It might come through his children. And so at the end of the day, the decisions that we make will have consequences. All of them have consequences. It just looks different for every person.
Yeah, you know, I like the way you put that. So what's the lesson here for people that may be going through some similar challenge or trying times or faced with similar decisions? What's the lesson here?
The lesson here is that when given an opportunity, you should take advantage of the opportunity and you should treasure what you have been given the opportunity to do. There are so many people that say, oh, I would love to have been in her shoes. I wouldn't have never. And you don't know what you would never do until you're there. You know, I'm sure somewhere in the crevices of Whitney's mind there was a moment she said, I could never be that person. I mean, what she said that during an interview, was it with Barbara Walters, about crack is whack.
Yeah,
you know, I don't
do
crack. You know, and yet we find out years later that she was doing it, you know. So you have to be a good steward of whatever it is that you've been blessed with. And sometimes we're not. And sometimes because our talent is so great and our gift is so enormous that people make excuses for us and they make allowances for us. But you've got to know that the Whitneys of the world come along once in a lifetime. And so there won't be another person, male or female, that could do it like Whitney did it and get away with it. It won't happen.
Yeah,
because of the world we live in right now.
So I want to shift the conversation further and talk about her life with Bobby Brown. How much do you think Bobby Brown played into the shift, the dramatic shift that we saw in Whitney's behavior compared to before she got married to him and to after she got married to him?
Well, if you remember about Bobby, Bobby was a lot of things, but it really wasn't about drugs. Bobby was what they called a bad boy. He did a lot of womanizing. He did a lot of drinking and hanging out. But it wasn't a lot of drugs around when you're talking about Bobby Brown. We inferred that there were drugs because of the drinking, or we inferred there was drugs because of the lifestyle that we thought we knew he was living. But we really didn't, and because of the women and all the children and all that, we made a lot of assumptions about Bobby. So I can't say who turned who on or who turned who out. You know, Whitney wasn't from small town USA. She was from Newark, New Jersey. So let's not play like she was, you know, from the cornfield somewhere. She was from the hood.
This
so she had a little bit in her anyway that allowed her to be attracted to a Bobby. And you look at her record of the type of men when she became who she was and who she was involved with, they all had a little darkness to them. They all had a little edginess to them. So, you know, I don't think Bobby, I think Bobby got it because he was the bad boy and she was the good girl.
Mm-hmm.
So he was the bad boy of R&B and she was America's princess.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how could this woman who has crossed over, you know, into white America be with such, you know, a person that's so beneath her?
Mm-hmm.
That was what everybody wanted to say. But I don't know if that was true or not.
You know, I like the way you put that because we don't know, right? And if you look at Bobby's history, he doesn't really have a history of indulging like that. So, but it still leads me to believe that Bobby, the man, the husband, the rock of the family, knew at least what was happening. I mean, if we all could see it, and he's right next to her, he should be able to see it as well. So do you think
right,
he had any culpability into her actions, you know, during their marriage, her behavior?
Well, it's two things you can take a look at. You can take a look at the fact that, yeah, he probably, I mean, at some point, you know, we don't know if he ever said, you know, babe, we should stop doing this. You know, you would think that after, you know, she got pregnant and she lost the first one and she got pregnant again and had Bobby Christina, that would have been enough to turn the corner. But when you have those, I mean, addiction is a serious, serious issue. And the slightest thing can cause you to go back. And I was having a conversation. And we talked about back when El DeBarge came back on the scene last year and how he went through his struggle and actually came out and told us everything. And, you know, here he was, had been in prison for 10 years or however long he had been in prison, and got out and got a record deal and was back touring, and boom, had a relapse, had to go back in. Because that thing is serious. It is not to be played with. It is not to be glossed over. It is not to be, excuse me, as though, oh, I can stop at any time. And even when Whitney did the interview with Oprah, during Oprah's final season, her language then was still not of one who had truly accepted or embraced her addiction, in my opinion. And so, you know, G.I. Joe says knowing is half the battle. And you go through different stages of grief, and you go through different stages when you're going through your cycle, and you have to admit you have a problem. You know, to say I have a problem, but then you're taking away that you have a problem. So, you know, there had to be a time where Bobby had to say enough is enough, and Whitney had to say enough was enough for herself. Bobby couldn't say that for her. She couldn't say it for him, you know. And they went down two very strange paths because his became all entangled in the legal system, you know, and she didn't have any legal issues. But his became more publicized because they were all legal. And who knows, maybe he was taking a fall for her because, you know, you hear you the bad boy for so long, then you figure I might as well be the bad boy, you know. So there's a lot of different things that play into how decisions are made in people's lives day to day.
You know, what's interesting here is that there are two distinct cases that you're referring to. You talked about DeBarge and you talked about Houston. And there are other cases that we can all point to, especially when it comes to entertainers, right? So my question to you is, why is it then that this pattern is very obvious to many people? You know, what's preventing the people around them from actually doing something for Whitney or for El DeBarge? What's preventing people from committing them and getting them real help over an extended period of time to save their lives ultimately?
Well, because at the end of the day, they have to want to go for themselves. So it doesn't matter if we do an intervention and we pack your bag for you and we drive you to the facility and we drop you off there. At the day you want to leave, you can just walk out. They don't make you stay when it's involuntary admittance. You just say, I don't want to do this no more. that's what happened with the guy that was the newscaster dude. That was the homeless guy that had the voice, you
right,
know,
right.
that
mm-hmm.
Dr. Phil then was helping and,
right.
and everything. Well, he went to rehab and then decided 3 days later he didn't want to be there no more, so he left. That because it's a voluntary, and until you're ready to commit for it to yourself, there's only so much your family can do. We can, you know, we can love you. We can show you that what you're doing is wrong and that, you know, that it's not going to do you any good. But until that person is ready to admit, I need some help and I have a problem, we can stage all the interventions in the world, and it's just not gonna resonate until they're ready for it to resonate. And some it never does. And some people can go through and never, quote-unquote, show addictive behaviors in terms of they not strung out and they ain't falling out at the club and all that. But if you got to have a drink every day, two or three of them, or if you wake up in the morning smoking your joint and you can't go to bed at night without smoking your joint, you do have a problem.
So,
Whether or not you want to admit it or
right,
not.
Right, absolutely.
You know, You do have a problem, and although you can go to work every day and you say, I'm a functional alcoholic, I've heard that my entire life.
Right,
you know,
right.
I'm a functional alcoholic or I'm a functional, you know, weed head or whatever. I still go to work and I take care of my kids, and, you know, they come up with all these reasons as to why it's okay to do what they're doing because they go to work every day.
Yeah. So you mentioned Ted Williams, the guy with the golden voice, the homeless man, he leaves rehab. So when you look at this thing from a social, moral, or ethic point of view, then, yeah, I can understand it. But when you look at it from an economic point of view, the people like Clive Davis and these contracts that they have, these multi-million-dollar contracts, isn't it in the best economic interest to make sure these people get healthy so they can continue producing? And where I'm going is, in a lot of cases, yeah, the moral solution might not be the right one, but the economic solution in a lot of cases is the right one. Doesn't it make financial sense to get these people some help so they can continue to do what they need to do to produce revenue?
Well, here's the thing about that. I don't know if you've watched many of the episodes that TV One has on the unsung people in terms of those in the music industry. But if you go back in time and look at a lot of our entertainers on both sides, black and white, a lot of them were intoxicated or high when they did some of their best songs. So, I mean, you look at Ray Charles. Go back to Ray Charles. And all he was enduring and yet wrote some of his best stuff at that time. So what is the producer looking for? A sober person or a hit? They're looking for the bottom line, right? And so
you would think they would be
concerned about the person. And I'm not saying that nobody wasn't concerned about Whitney or Clive Davis was. That's not what I'm saying. But at the end of the day, the people that are producing the record and the record company is concerned about the bottom line, and that's the dollar and that's the profit. Because the same could be said of, you know, Amy Winehouse, you know,
mm-hmm.
that's a brilliant
mm-hmm.
talent as well.
Right.
That, you know, is no longer with us,
yeah.
you know, for a whole lot of reasons. And so who was there to, you know, who was there for her when she needed it most? And so even if, as I stated, the people around them can stage and be there and say, I really need you. And there are some people that can get clean for a certain amount of time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I remember, I think it was Samuel Jackson or somebody talked about how they can get clean for a movie and then they back to what they need to go do because they know
right.
they need the movie to make
right.
the money.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they can perform and give you what you need because the money is in the album sales and the videos and, you know, all that stuff, you know. And so if the album sales are hot, then they know people are going to go see them in concert.
Yeah, understand. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. If you're just now joining us, we're talking about the death of Whitney Houston. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. So let's focus now, Jima, on the daughter. As I mentioned early on, she has now been recently rushed to the hospital. As of 10:30 a.m. Pacific time, she has been rushed to Cedars-Sinai's Medical Center. The Beverly Hills Police Department has confirmed this. CBS News is reporting on this, that Barbara Christina Brown, the only child of the late singer Whitney Houston, has been rushed to an L.A. hospital. Jima, what effect do you think this will have on the short term and long term on Bobby Christina?
Well, I mean, the long term is that, you know, she knows she, you know, she only had her mother for a short time. And so that in itself, all the things that she didn't get to do, her mother not being here for her wedding or for her first child, and so all of those things will have an impact on her, you know, her, you know, graduating and you know, becoming whoever it was she was going to become. Her mother won't see that. And so that's going to have a long-term impact. And I think the short-term is just is as significant because she's in a place now that, you know, not too many of us can be. Not too many of us have been in terms of losing a parent. But in terms of losing a parent that the whole world knew and the whole world has their opinion of, and then you have to grieve, you know, in public, basically. Do you even get to grieve in private? And so where does, you know, how does she do that when she's already had her own struggles, you know, and that's been publicized to the 10th degree and that we blamed her mother for, you know, and we blamed her father for. So, you know, she's in a real delicate place, and, you know, I hope a sweet spirit of serenity finds her and that she talks to someone who's experienced it. You know, it would be great if Paris or you know, one of Michael's kids could call her and say, we understand, because they do, you know.
Yeah, this is true.
Because they, too, are in the bubble. And so they would know what that's like and be able to give her some words of comfort, some words of encouragement, some words of you'll get through this, you know. And so I hope that child who's experienced exactly what she's experienced from a parent who died too soon and who was in such high regard in the world of entertainment, that, you know, they reach out to her and they give her, you know, some comfort.
The phone lines are open to join the conversation. The number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. We're going to go to the phone lines right now. Hello, caller, last four, 7102. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Give us your name, where you're calling from.
Hi there, guys. Hi, Patrick. Hi, Jima. This is the Esquire Abby on the line. Oh, yeah, all the way live.
The Motor City Maharani, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you, Patrick. And hats off to you. Very good topic. Very good subject. Excellent dialogue.
Awesome. Thank you. So we're talking right now about the death of Whitney Houston. And specifically, we looked at the impact or non-impact that Bobby Brown had. And now we're just taking a look at the impact short-term and long-term this will have an effect on her daughter, Bobby Christina. What do you think, Abby, that the effect it would have on her daughter short-term and long-term?
You know, short-term, I think it's going to be a staged grieving process. Definitely Christina is going to experience a lot of anger, a lot of wrath, a sense of betrayal, you know, because she looked at her mama in a different way. See, we saw Whitney as this stellar performer that many of us took so much pride in the 80s. You know, the very, you know, essence of her presence. She had such a strong spirit. But she knew the Whitney that we didn't know on a personal level, because that was her mother. She saw the struggles that she and her dad had on that intrapersonal level. And so I think it's going to be a lot of healing she's going to have to do. She's going to need a lot of support. She's going to need a lot of counseling. And I know Dion is going to be right there. And certainly I know Sissy, her grandmother, is going to be right there. So I think it's going to be just not the grieving of losing her mother, because I think right now she's feeling a lot of anger, a lot of anxiety. Then once she gets over the anxiety and the sense of betrayal that her mother pushed her punch card before time, then they come the follow phase. She's really going to have to deal with the absence of not having Whitney there on a physical level. Because even though Whitney was alive, there was a lot of space in between her and her daughter because of her mannerism and her lifestyle. And see, people don't understand, Patrick, and listening audience, the dichotomy of a person when they have a substance abuse issue and they're trying to get over it, they become numb to the people around them. It's not that they're vindictive people, but, you know, the whole circumference is the whole high concept, you know, getting to that phase where they can feel euphoric about themselves through the substance. They lose the connectivity component with others around them, and that can cause a lot of heartbreak. So literally, in some aspects, it may seem a little cruel, that person already seems to be dead to you long before they make their physical transition.
You know, that's an interesting point. Jima, I want you to kind of weigh in on that issue too, and I want you to weigh in also on the fact that how will this affect her behavior moving forward then? We talked about how the relationship with her mom and things of that nature, but now once she comes to the realization that this has happened, what impact do you think it will have on her behavior moving forward?
Well, it's going to be it's going to be up and down. It's just because she's going to have to go through those stages, and she's going to have to go through them. See, sometimes we do people a disservice because we try to shield them from the hurt and the pain. And the only way you get through the hurt and the pain is you got to go through the hurt and the pain. So the only way she's going to get over, or not necessarily get over, but be able to reconcile, you know, the death of her mother at this age in her life is that she's got to feel every last one of those feelings and give herself permission to feel every last one of those feelings, anger, shame, guilt, love, happiness, peace, whatever they are, she gives herself permission to feel, and we have to give her the space to feel. So we can't make her feel like we think she should feel. However she feels, is those are hers and they're unique to her. And so we can't make her feel sadder or you know, happier or more at peace. She has to go through these things on her own, and we've got to give her the opportunity to do that. And so it will look different, you know, over time because she'll grow, hopefully, at each stage. And now, what I hope happens is that if she stays in a place for too long, that there will be some sort of, you know, reaching out to, not to shield her, but just to say, okay, baby, you've been here too long now. Let's move to another, you know, another tier of this. So that she recognizes that she's not a bad person. You know, there's nothing wrong with her. Everything she's feeling is logical, realistic, and it makes sense.
All right, I love it. We're going to take another break, and when we return, we're going to talk a little bit about the scene of the crime, if you will. Not that it was a crime, but we're going to talk about the scene that took place. Her being discovered, that they say, in the bathtub. Her being down, mingling with people, and all of a sudden, hours later, she was found at 3 o'clock, a little bit after 3:30, and they couldn't revive her. We're going to talk a little bit about that when we return. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook.
Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our company's tailor-made training and consulting, current events, and Ask Shima can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for a discounted book for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Need a new website? Haven't figured out your social media strategy? Are you finally ready to tweet, post, or blog? Well, look no further. Go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. We are the number one resource for small businesses and nonprofits. We're a full service, interactive consulting firm specializing in social media marketing, web design, technology workshops, as well as leadership and management training. So go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. Google me.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. If you're just now joining us, we are talking about Whitney Houston's death. We've been covering a lot of different aspects of her death, not just the fact that she died and it was a sad affair, but we also looked at her life before Bobby Brown and after Bobby Brown. We also talked about the dynamics of her relationship with her daughter, and we also talked about her daughter's behavior. And so now we want to take a look at the scene of the crime, if you will, what happened and the issues that were surrounding that particular time and place. So we have joining us, of course, Jima, and we also have the Motor City Maharani on the phone. So, Jima, we want to go to you first. What do you make of the scene that it happened?
Well, I mean, okay, so we know she was in L.A. for the Grammys and that you know, she'd been there for a couple of days. She had gone to a couple of free Grammy parties on Thursday and had been at Grammy rehearsal on Friday, as well as some things happening earlier in the day on Saturday. So it wasn't, I mean, she was where she was supposed to be. I mean, she's there every year for the Grammys party what's his name? That Clive Davis does. She actually walks in with him every year. So her being there was not, you know, out of the ordinary. Her being there at the hotel was not out of the ordinary. So everything seemed to be how it was supposed to be, in terms of where she was supposed to be. Just seemed as though there was maybe a couple of situations that occurred that, you know, now looking back, people may wonder, I wonder if, you know.
Right.
You know.
Okay, let's shift to Abby. Abby, what do you make of the scene that she was allegedly found in the bathtub? They couldn't revive her. The police called around 3:43 p.m. and then at 3:55 they pronounced her dead. It seems like it was it was like she was already dead before they got there. What do you make of that?
Well, you know something, it's really really statutory, just as Jima was saying. Everything that led up was not outside of the pattern of the norm, Patrick. Everything seemed normal. However, who's to say the 30 minutes before the incident actually happened, what was on Whitney's mind? Had she intended within her mind, you know, she was going to commit suicide? Sometimes people commit suicide without saying a word to other people. Sometimes their actions, sometimes their behaviors that people don't pick up on, because oftentimes we need to be recipients of the messages that people don't verbally tell us and don't communicate with us, because sometimes these, you know, these emotions could be raging within them. You know, knowing full well that, you know, the majority of the time that she was in the public eye, she was, you know, not in a very favorable posture. They always saw her either when she was coming down off the high or getting ready to go into rehab. They didn't project a very good picture of her. So, you know, when you were once deemed as this high, you know, society, you know, stellar performer, everyone loved Whitney all across the world, loved Whitney, her voice, her character, her spirit. And then suddenly, because you have a failure in your life and you give yourself over to a behavior that's not adamant to a positive image, you suddenly become the public spectacle. So I think there was a lot of emotional turmoil going on. Perhaps she decided to just get that one last high to kind of calm her nerves and to get her sublime. And it, you know, and it kind of reminds me of Michael Jackson in a typical way. She took too much, or else she knew what she was doing, and this is perhaps the way she wanted to go.
Okay, we're going to go to the phone lines once again. Let's go to last four. 3732. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Give us your name and where you're calling from.
This is Mr. Motivator in Dallas.
Hey, Mr. Motivator, how's it going?
Hey, it's going great.
Good. You have a comment or a question?
I have a little bit of both. You
okay.
Know, I think you, the situation is very tragic that happened to Whitney and. My question is, do you believe that sometimes we can put so much pressure on people that we can push them to a point where it gets beyond the level that they feel like they can handle things? And so my question is, Do you think sometimes we as fans and the media do we push people to that point, or do you think there are alternatives that,
you know? That's a good question, Mr. Motivator.
Yeah, go ahead.
So Abby, let me let you feel that first. Abby, what do you think? Can we as a as the fans, as the audience, as everyday people, put pressure on our celebrities that forces them to act in these type of erratic behaviors?
Yes, I do believe we can contribute to that type of mindset, because we want to project them as picture perfect, no flaws, no faults, you know, not a hair out of place, not a wrinkle in the clothing. Picture perfect. And when a person feels as though they cannot meet that image, they look for an escape clause. Whether an escape clause is substance abuse, whether it's illicit behavior behind the scenes, whether it's pornography, they resort to something as an escape mechanism. So yes, we can be unfair, because we start looking at them as being immortal, as opposed to being, you know, the same as we are, you know, and nevertheless with the same shortcomings and the same flaws, and we put too much pressure. There's too much paparazzi. You know, they can't even go to the grocery store. They can't even turn the corner and have a bad hair day without being captured. So, yes, it's unfair, the pressure that, you know, oftentimes comes with stardom. That's the reason why it's important to realize before you get into the arena, you need to be prepared, you know, not only emotionally, or psychologically and materialistically. You need to be prepared spiritually, because you're going to be battling dark and negative forces that are going to come at you, and the temptation is at its heights. And if you're not strong enough to, you know, be statured to say, you know what, I know whom it is that I am and what I'm destined to do, you can definitely fall short. And God gives us these examples each and every day. Look at Amy Winehouse, what happened with her. Look at Michael Jackson. You know, we know that Etta James died of not natural causes. And look at Mr. Don Cornelius. So there's a whole lot of examples out there that we need to take heed to.
Yeah, you know, Jima, you talked about this early on during this broadcast about the bubble and the effects that being in that position can have upon you. So I want you to feel that question, Jima. What do you think the impact of the pressure that fans have on these stars?
I agree. I think we do sometimes make unrealistic expectations out of people, because people are human and we are prone to make mistakes. It doesn't matter how much money you have, how famous you are still, you still put your pants on one leg at a time. You can't put them on any other way. And so we try to make people be something that we are not. And so we put these undue pressures on them. And at the end of the day, you know, we have our own accountability to ourselves, as do these people have to themselves. But I do think we put some undue pressure to be perfect, to be right all the time, excuse me, and to be without blemish. And that was only one person, and that was the one who they nailed to the cross. So all the rest of
That's
us
right.
have blemishes, and all the rest of us have faults, and all the rest of us have issues. And whether or not, you know, mine is magnified because I'm a celebrity, I've been in a movie, I've been in a video, I wrote a book, or whether it's magnified in my neighborhood because my neighbors know me. At the end of the day, you know, I have to hold myself to some sort of standard, and I can only hope that I'm not putting unnecessary pressures on myself that I won't be able to sustain. Because it's in those unnecessary pressures that I can't sustain that then I really take a nosedive, and I begin to self-medicate and do all sorts of other things to try to stay at a high that was already not where I was supposed to be.
Right. So I want to shift the conversation now to another thing that's really saturating the news. And I'm glad Mr. Motivator brought that topic up, because it's a nice transition from the issue with Whitney and the fact that the pressure that's upon her to this other issue and the potential pressure that that someone may arrive because they have a new show. And that new person is Melissa Harris Perry. And there's some pressure now coming from Cornel West, and who I would consider in a lot of cases that is not necessarily considered, but I want to ask the question, is he, Cornel West, that is, the new head crab in the crabs in the bucket syndrome? And here's what Cornel West said, and this is why I asked that question. In what might be the strongest public comments yet, West referred to Harris Perry as a fake and a fraud for allowing herself to be used by the liberal establishment to shoot down his critiques over our nation's decision to overlook racial inequality and poverty. Now, here's the Democratic Underground.com is saying that he was quoted in an article, but only as a supporter of Dr. West. Anyone who evaluates Cornel West's track record will see that he has consistently advocated for black, brown, and poor people long before hope and change slogans were thrust onto our TV screens. And here's what I have to say in response to that. You know, I wrote a blog on this a couple of days ago about the fact that when I used to look at Dr. West, I used to look at him in admiration. I used to look at him because of his mastery of the English language and the fact that he used the words, and I quote, most white people didn't understand. And that's not an offense to them, but it's the fact that his rhetoric, his language was so superior than a lot of people. And then all of a sudden, the President Obama comes onto the scene, and then at the time, Senator Obama. And then there were some opposing views, and things begin to happen. It seems to me that Cornel West began to take a different turn. His trajectory changed when it came to the president. And now it looks to me like anybody supports or come to the aid of President Obama or comes to the aid of his argument, President Obama's argument about his policies, he begins to shoot at them with this lyrical denigration. You can look at what he talked about when he was feuding with Al Sharpton. Now he's feuding with Melissa Harris Perry. So I pose the question as we move on pressuring people, and it seems like to me, and I use the term bullying Melissa Harris Perry, is he head crab in the bucket nowadays? What is going on with Dr. Cornel West? And Jima, I ask you first.
Well, I could be cynical and say I'm wondering if Dr. Cornel West need to go see a doctor and
I think
some early onsets of Alzheimer's or Selectheimer's or whatever, because it seems as though some of his comments are just so out the box and so unnecessary, and mm-hmm. and then not warranted. I mean, you know, my comments have been to people on Facebook. I have no problem with your critique, but if I have difficulty determining whether or not this is a critique or you just hating on somebody, then that means you wasn't
yes.
real clear. That means you've mm-hmm. added some things in there that's not based on facts. Because if I'm critiquing you and I say you told me you were going to go to the store and that you were going to come right back home, well, then if that's what I'm critiquing you on, going to the store and coming back home, then I can't talk about what you did yesterday. Because now I'm not critiquing you on what you just did. Now I'm talking about other stuff. I'm bringing in other things into it. So what is it? Am I critiquing you about today? Or am I critiquing you about your whole life? And so I think sometimes Cornell gets, you know, and his language, he thinks he's smarter than everybody in the room, for one. And when he, you know, and because the language he uses can catch people off guard. But I find it interesting. I find it right. interesting that this same type of rhetoric that he has spewed at Dr. Melissa Harris Perry, I have not heard him say about Professor Michael Eric Dyson. And he owns MSNBC not. Just as much. Or right. about, you know, Eugene Robinson, the columnist, who's a diehard, you know, supporter, but can be just as objective. And so what is it about Melissa Harris Perry that has him up in arms? And maybe that's something we need to research. But I think his critique is off base, and I think he needs to stick to the facts, and which I don't even know what they could possibly be. I don't even understand it. It was like, where did this even come from?
Yeah, right. You know, I have to agree with you. And so I think it's safe to say that we all had an admiration for Dr. West back in the day. So, yeah. Abby, what happened?
You know something, I agree with Jima, Patrick. You know, this man, and I believe he has select timers, or else he's an alum nut, or else literally this man, he is thirsting for power, recognition, and fame. So he's thirsty for, so he poured himself a big old glass of haterade against President Obama. And see, he's doing it because he wants the attention of the media. He wants to be the circumference of the setting. And any time a person suffers from extreme narcissism, that's
sure,
right,
that's
the grandiosis,
man.
Type of personality, they project these images as a way of trying to get attention at the expense of someone else. Hell, if he's that smart, he would know what a critique is. A critique is a short synopsis reflecting your point of view, not criticizing the other person. He needs to go back and take English 100 all the way to 108 and learn what a damn critique is, because he's not doing that. He's criticizing. He's ostracizing because he feels
yeah.
a sense of denigration as it relates to his character, as it relates to the president. You know, and then my most humble of assertion, I think him and Tavis Smiley are like blood brothers. Because ever since that failed endeavor that they did last time around, they have been some very bitter and very asinine
yeah.
people indeed.
Yeah. So I wonder then, a person of that intellectual capacity, what is his motive? Because he understands the English language. He understands the use of words and the timing of those uses of those words. So he must have, on some accounts, an ulterior motive. Jimmy, what could that motive potentially be?
Okay, you know, here's my take on it. Here's my take on it. And sometimes I have these conversations in my head, and then when I have them outside of my head, I just be like, wow, did that really come from me? Here's my thing about about Cornell. and he is at a point where I'm going to take you back in time. And I said this during the week on Reverend Al's show, Keeping It Real. We have to be careful of distractors. And we are in such a critical time in our country that we cannot afford to fall asleep at the wheel. Falling mm-hmm. asleep at the wheel this time will be detrimental. And the problem is, I don't think enough of us believe that. We think we'll recover like we did last time. You know that person that drinks and drives and they never have an accident or they have a slight fender bender. So they think, oh, it's
right.
Okay, so they keep doing it, and then next thing you know, they've caused a 20-car pileup. And in their mind,
mm-hmm.
they're trying to figure out, but I didn't have any more than I normally had. Well, you were still drunk, though. So we're at a point now where it's real critical.
Mm.
And we've been asleep before, and
mm-hmm.
things kind of worked out okay. We slept through George Bush, right?
Mm-hmm.
We didn't fight, and we, not we just as black people, but we did not fight hard enough in 2000 when we know the election was stolen. We
right.
did not
That's
fight
right.
that. We did not fight back hard enough when they did the Swift boat attack against John Kerry. We did not fight back hard enough. If we
That's
do right. the same tactics that we did then, we will not recover this time at all. And I don't think
That's
we
right.
truly believe that. And so when you have people back in the day, as they did in when Martin was marching in Memphis, the first time he went there and they found out that those young men had been paid by the FBI to create a distraction
mm-hmm,
and to be
mm-hmm,
the
mm-hmm.
agitators, we must look out for the agitator.
Mm.
I'm not saying that that's Dr. West. I'm just saying we need to be on guard for that. We need to look. And when we think we find it, we need to call it what it is and not
that's
be afraid
it.
Of whatever the backlash might be. Because
That's
they're going
right.
to talk and do whatever. So Dr. West scares me because I don't know what he's doing.
Mm.
I don't understand.
You don't know what he's doing.
Right. And it's not connected to anything that's going to
nope.
be sustainable. Because I tell you this, he will not have a platform. Let's just keep
nope.
it real. He will
that's
not
it.
Have a platform the day President Obama is no longer in office because nobody's going to care.
That's right.
Right.
So they want to.
They definitely not gonna have that conversation about no other
right.
president.
Exactly. And so they talk about he's been talking about poverty for 30 years. Okay, what you been doing about it for 30 years though?
Right.
Nothing.
because if you've been talking about poverty for 30 years, there should be some evidence in somebody's community that you've been there.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
So for that to be, you know, the foundation where he's always talked about poverty. I don't need you talking no more. I need you doing.
That's it.
So when you went out on your poverty tour, did you have a job fair?
Right.
Did you help anybody stay in their house that was about to go in foreclosure?
No.
Did you point them in the right direction of what to do? You know, what did you do to address poverty to a person? Because, you know, we make changes one block at a time. We build buildings one brick at a time, right?
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
So if I recognize that you, one person out of the 500 is in this audience, if I can have a direct impact on you, then you would then have a direct impact on somebody else. So what direct impact did the poverty tour have in the cities in which it visited?
Zero.
And
impact.
We know that it was in Detroit.
Nothing.
So did they have a direct impact on the education system that we talked about earlier this year in terms of them not even having books for the kids at school?
Right.
So how are you going
to
talk about what the president isn't doing when in your own book, when we talk about the covenant with Black America and how you ended it with the book Accountable and you outline all these things the president can do that the president said he was going to do when he was running for president, you outline what you need governors to do, what you need Congress people to do, what you need your state legislators to do, what you need the faith-based community to do, and then what you need you and I to do. And the only person I hear you berating on television is the president, then you lose credibility.
Yeah.
That's right.
Because
nobody
you cannot claim that you are down for the people and you're down when you're talking about poverty. And the only person you're holding responsible for poverty is the President of the United States. That's asinine
mm-hmm.
to me. I don't understand it.
Right, right.
That's right.
You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. And if you're just now joining us, we're talking about what I'm asking, the simple question about the head crab in the crabs in the bucket. Is it Cornel West? Recently he came out and called he called Melissa Harris Perry a fake and a fraud. And so we're just simply asking, why would he do something along those lines? We're going to go to the phone lines, and we're going to take a caller, last four, 0596. Welcome to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Do you have a comment or a question?
Just a comment to add on to what the sister was saying shortly, right?
Yeah.
My name's JoJo from out of VA, right?
Okay, JoJo.
This Cornel West, right? He probably smoked crack. Now, it's a YouTube. I believe he smoked crack and smoked marijuana and all that, you know, because he's real sick talking, right? He down with them people, and he know what he about to do. He introduced Barack Obama for the first time in New York.
Okay.
And you probably could, pull it up, you know, do a little surfing and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
But our people, we're going to make it, though, but it's a lot of them. They don't sold out.
So what do you think is wrong with Dr. West, JoJo, the fact that he keeps coming out and saying all these negative things against people that support President Obama? I understand when you give a critique of somebody, but if you're going to be a person that gives critique, shouldn't you critique both sides? Why is it he hasn't came out to talk against the issues that Rick Santorum has said, the issues that Newt Gingrich or Mitt Romney, they also have opposing views to the Democratic Party? Why isn't it he come out and say things against those people?
Look, let me tell you how much less of a man he is.
Okay.
If any of them Jewish lobbyists or anybody from Israel come over, you'll see how much man he is. He know his place, and he know he bad not. He bad not speak above his bruh in any kind of way. them Negroes out there, they ain't men.
Mm-hmm.
They ain't men.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But we got to do this ourselves. Because all them Negroes up there on the top, they just killed the girl yesterday. I born 1963, that's like she was born in 1963. But they killed that girl.
That was sad. Mm-hmm.
She can't sing no more. She ain't nothing to her.
Right.
So now they're going to make merchandise off her death.
Well, JoJo, we appreciate it. Thank you for your call.
Okay. Yes, peace.
Right. Yeah. So, Jim, what do you make of the? I mean, well, Abby, I want you to weigh in, right? I mean, Jima gave us her dissertation about Dr. Fred, which we love. In fact, I know I do. So, Abby, what's your position? Why? What's his motive? What's causing him to do this or act in this manner or behave in this fashion when we know that the president is doing so much to serve not just our people but the United States in general? What is wrong with Dr. West? Is he the head crab?
You know, and go ahead, Patrick. You know what? If I could take him and place him on the table back to the days when I was in biology 101 and dissect him, where would I start? Okay, with his brain. Number one is this: he suffers from, to my most humble assertion, a narcissistic personality disorder. That means that everyone around him is inferior, incapable, incomprehensible, incomprehensible, except he is the king of the hill. If you don't think the way he thinks, if you don't speak the way he speaks, you are inferior. He has reflected many of his beliefs upon social Darwinism, that some of us are yet under the evolutionary chain, but he has progressed to the highest level of human existence. Number one, he's a psychological deficit. Number two, he's in a state of confusion. He's not getting the media exposure, the attention, the whole focus placed upon him, his successes and his endeavors and his whole persona. So he feels the only way he can get attention from the media is to talk down the president. Because who's the hottest ticket in America and around the world as it relates to our country and our people? President Barack Obama.
That's right.
First African-American president. That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Young, intelligent, white, intellectually capable, children well-reared. But he's a hot topic. So if you attack a hot topic, you become a hot toddy. You may not be the toddy, but you're part of the toddy elixir. He's doing it for the attention of the media.
Mm,
Thirdly,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
He has not progressed in his career. as extreme as he believed himself. Like Jima said, for 30 years he spoke about poverty. If you spoke out in 30 years about poverty, why aren't you the vice president of the national chapter of the NAACP?
Mm.
National Association for Colored People. Why
mm-hmm.
aren't you there? Why aren't you with the AFL-CIO feeling the pain of the auto work industry? Why aren't you in the U.S. Department of Education with Arne Duncan on his advisory board? Why aren't you the head of state? Why aren't you the senator? Why aren't you a member of the congressional district? You talk loud, but you ain't saying nothing because you ain't done nothing. And you hate this man because he speaks the word, Patrick. He tells what he's going to do, and he missions out, and he does it. He's hating because he's not taking. He's not a man. He's a coward. But to those of the lighter complexities, and I hate to call him a sublimial racist, he bites the bit and kisses butt. But to his own people, he's just like those Negroes, that main Negro that spoke out against Nat Turner during the slave revolt. He's no better than that. I believe somewhere along the line we're going to find out that he is in that same bloodline with those Detroit artists that turned against Nat Turner. He's part of them too, and I can't stand him. He sickens me. He's on the most hated list in my book. So he needs to sit down and take his medications, stay out the crack house, as the brother just said. Get his head together. He needs to go through rehab and treatment because that man is not balanced. And if people would ignore this fool, he would sit down somewhere and just retire in his own quiet corner and make his own self miserable.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
see, the
yeah.
thing about it, is that because so many people, and this goes back to what we were talking about earlier in terms of unrealistic expectations we place on other people, because so many people decided to place the president at this level of just, he is going to become president and my life will immediately be better. That was so unrealistic. And people, and even when he was running, you know, as Senator Obama, he kept trying to, you know, bring it down just a notch. We're going to have a lot of work to do. And this is going to take a lot of time to do everything I want to do. But
sure,
no, people had their own ideas about how things in their world was going to change almost overnight without them doing anything. And that is a problem with America, and it's definitely a problem, and I'll say it, in Black America, is that we want something for nothing. We don't want to work hard. We want to take the road that's already been traveled, not the road
that's
less
right.
traveled. We want to take the road that's already been traveled and already been laid out, and we don't have to think too hard about nothing. And so because we thought that the president was going to come in and my life was going to get better in at least 9 days.
Black hope. The black
right,
society.
And because
that's right.
it hasn't happened the way I, you know, created in my brain for it to happen, now the president ain't, you know, he ain't doing nothing in the black community. Well, what are you doing in the black community? He doesn't ever mention the word poverty to me. But you know what he talks about? And here's the thing. And, you know, I go back to this book again, Accountable. And they talked about what he was going to do. And then the question is, you know, have you addressed pressing financial issues? Well, yeah. Because I think he's taken a look at our financial system and tried to get them to make some changes to that.
That's right.
He's tried to do some things around the tax reform. He's put together several teams of economists to try to get the best answer. So that was just a part to the president.
He's
if they would go
president.
Before
That's
Congress
right.
and go testify in front of Congress about poverty, because just like you said, Patrick, while they out talking about the president, one of these three or four people that's running right now on the Republican side saying some crazy stuff.
Yeah.
I have yet to hear one of them come out and denounce or say he wrong, talking about poor, poverty, and black. I have yet to hear Tavis, and I'm not saying they haven't done it. I just ain't.
You haven't done it.
I have yet to hear Dr. West come out and just berate Newt Gingrich and Rick Santorum and all of them for their comments that they've made, or even not even their comments, but their stance on what they're going to do for the poor. If you rely, they not doing nothing for the poor. So you think the poor got it bad now? You let one of them get in office and see what's going to happen.
That's right.
Like they'll be living on a commune. That's right. They'll be living in a commune.
Yeah, and
that's
so
right.
where is the thorn? You know, everybody wants to be Frederick Douglass. Well, then why you can't be Frederick Douglass to one of them?
That's right.
He
didn't become a senator yet. He's not even a state representative. He needs to just sit down and retire his boots because he's making a fool out of himself.
You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. We're approaching the last segment of our show, and I want to shift the conversation once again, this time to Roland Martin. Now, Roland Martin sent out a tweet a couple of days ago, and it has created a firestorm. And so I want to get Abby and Jima to weigh on this, and also the listening audience. If you want to weigh in on the conversation, I also have a chat room out there, and you can also hit me out on Twitter. I'll read your tweets live on the air. Of course, Facebook, and you can just call in using my bell. But at any rate, here's what The Root had to say about this issue. Now, New York Times columnist Charles M. Blow evaluates the aftermath of Roland Martin's Super Bowl Twitter scandal. He said that the lesson learned involves more than being politically correct. It's about being sensitive to those being singled out. Now, I'm going to say that again. He says that the lesson learned involves more than being politically correct. It's about being sensitive to those being followed. Now, he said, I follow Martin on Twitter. I know that he likes to joke and tease. I even joked with him. So I can believe that in his mind, he may have thought that these were just harmless jokes in which violence was fictional and funny. But in the real world, where bullying and violence against gays and lesbians, or even those assumed to be so, is all too real. Jokes like his hold no humor. There are too many bruised ribs and black eyes and buried bodies for the target of this violence to just listen up and laugh. We all have to understand that effects can operate independent of intent, that subconsciousness bias can move counter to conscious egalitarianism, and that malice needs not to be present within the individual to fuel the maliciousness of the society at large. Now, Roland put out a tweet, and of course it was misconstrued in a lot of ways, but he has since been fired, not necessarily fired, I'm going to use the term suspended by CNN because of this tweet. Now, my question is simply this. Why is it that it is cause for concern when Roland Martin sends out a tweet that's insensitive to gays, but when it comes to African Americans, insensitivity is not even questioned? Abby, let me let you respond first.
You know something, and this is just so strange. Certain areas of sensitivity are acclimated to certain individuals. You know, when it comes to, you know, the issue with gays and lesbians, it's always more sensitive than the issues with, you know, other racial divisions and things of that magnitude. Who's ever thought about the very jargons that are being used about overweight people? That is the underrepresented population. Nobody talks about overweight people. They make jokes about them, but no one ever goes public to say it's wrong to make fun of fat people. So to me, they're blowing this all out of proportion. It's not even as serious as that, because it took them literally 2 months to get Imus off the air, and he called our young ladies a bunch of jungle bunnies and a bunch of nappy-headed heifers and everything else, and he consistently made – he wasn't joking. He was making real statements. So, I mean, my goodness, there's a humor piece in everything. And some things are geared to more being less humorous because they deal with real life and real issues like satire. You know, satire is a serious formulation of comedy that is not funny, but you can find some degree of humor in it. So that's just a little bit overstated and overrated. I mean, sanctioning someone because of something like that, oh, please.
So,
Howard Stern.
Right, exactly.
Nobody did to Howard Stern, and he's one of the most critical, most astronomically over the top rude people that I've ever seen in my life, who's now going to be on national TV once again. So they need to give the man a fair shake and leave him alone. This is a year to pick upon the African Americans.
Yeah.
I guess we're the sacrificial lambs, it looks like. It started with Mayor Kilpatrick all the way down. So
yeah. So just for clarity, one of the messages read, and I quote, "If a dude at your Super Bowl party is hyped about David Beckham's H&M underwear ad, smack the ish out of him," and then hashtag Super Bowl. And then another message read, "Who the hell was that New England Patriot that just showed in a head-to-toe pink suit? Oh, he needs a visit from," and then the hashtag team whipped that ass. So Those were the two tweets that the Gay and Lesbian Alliance Against Defamation said that they that it advocated violence against gay people, and then asked CNN to fire Martin. But it turns out the only thing that they did was suspend him, I think, indefinitely right now. But that language, what was used, he used. And if you follow Roland on Twitter, you know he sends out tweets all day, every day. I mean, in fact, he just like it's all he does. But for the most part, no one knows that. I mean, everyone knows that he doesn't have any type of malice in his heart. His intent, his viewers and the people that follow him doesn't even go in that direction when it comes to that. But yet and still, Jima, what happened here in this case?
Well, you have several things that happened. You have the elephant in the room, and that elephant is the fact that, in my opinion, there are certain members of the gay and lesbian community that want to consistently force their lifestyle on me and make me be okay with who they are. And if I'm not okay with who they are, then I'm discriminating against them, which is not the case. I just disagree with your lifestyle. But that doesn't mean that I don't care about your well-being just because I disagree with your lifestyle. And I think if I had to spend, if you had to convince me that I needed to be offended by what he said, then I shouldn't be offended. Because if I'm going to be offended, I'm going to be offended on my own merit. I'm not going to need you to show it to me and dissect it. And then you did what we always do. We pile on. So now you want to go back to something he said in an article he wrote 2 years ago when his wife, being ordained minister, was counseling, you know, a parishioner who had come to her asking for help because he said he was gay and you know, wanted to be in the choir and didn't know how that was going to work, so he wanted her to pray for him and yada, yada, yada. And so now you want to go back to that article. So was this about a tweet from the Super Bowl, or now you're trying to say that he does this all the time? And so because he does this all the time, then he needs to be censored and he needs to be silenced. My problem with that is, just as you stated, Abby, is that Howard Stern says some of the most egregious things about everybody, black, white, green, purple, gay, or straight, and especially about gay people. And I have yet to see Howard Stern be censored. You know, that Chelsea Lately, or whatever her name is, she says some of the most egregious things about gay people, and I've yet to see this outcry. So what was it really all about? Who knows? But at the end of the day, we all know Roland has 12,000 jobs, and and whether or not he goes back on CNN would be a loss to CNN because of Roland. I know for sure, I can just speak for myself, there were times I only watched CNN because Roland had put out a tweet that something was going to come up.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah, we do the same thing.
You know, so, you know, and that's just being real. I mean, that's not to say I don't like Don or I don't like, you know, Frederica or some of the other people. But 9 times out of 10, I was looking at CNN because Roland had told me something was going to come up on CNN and I need to watch it. And so that's what I did. So they will see a significant, I would presume, a significant decline in numbers, not just because people might agree or disagree, but just for the sheer fact that people are not going to be paying attention to what's happening on CNN anymore. And I've been where Roland is in terms of having your written words misinterpreted and stated, you know, to mean one thing, and you knew exactly what you meant when you wrote it. And even when questioned about it, you know, Roland, and then they were saying that his apology wasn't a real apology. Well, they wanted him to say he was wrong. And I've sat in that seat, and I refused to say I was wrong because I wasn't wrong. Now, if you was offended by what I stated, I did apologize to you if you were offended, because everybody wasn't. So why am I going to say I was wrong when there was just as many people who agreed with me as those that didn't? So the same thing with Roland. I'm not agree to, you know, he's not agree to say, you know, he wrong for making that statement or whatever. And he's done the political thing. He's you know, said he'd meet with GLAAD and they can talk about whatever they need to talk about and, you know, maybe come up with something. But, you know, I found it interesting that one of the ladies on Warren Valentine's show this week, she was talking and she wasn't from GLAAD, but when he had called them for a statement, they had him contact this particular organization, and I think it's the Black Gay and Lesbian something or another. And this, you know, she couldn't even really say what was offensive about the tweet. And it really seemed like at the end of the day, they just wanted somebody, because she kept talking about black leadership and what black leadership does for the black community, the black gay community. And it just seemed like at the end of the day, they wanted somebody black to do a PSA on gay people. I don't know. But, I mean, you know, you know, it just seemed like it's taking, you know, we're going, and this is another distraction.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Because you take a look at what happened at CPAC. And all them crazy people they had at that Republican thing, and these are the people that's running for office of the United States of America.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then some of those people in that room are already in Congress. That's what we need to be talking about. We need to be talking about those people that sit in a room with white supremacist groups and hear them spew all sorts of hate and rhetoric, and you are, and I'm paying you. Because my tax dollars is paying your salary. That's what we ought to be up in arms about. You know, we get up in arms about the wrong stuff, and we spend you know, an unnecessary amount of time on it. But we, you know, we would sleep this weekend on CPAC, and I guarantee, and some stuff happened up in there that we better make sure don't now one of them people get in office.
Amen to that.
And I think we're gonna shift there in just a second. I want to talk real quickly as we close this section out about what Roland said in his response. And here's what he said in his response. He said, "Based on several tweets I made on my Twitter feed on Super Bowl Sunday yesterday, I have been accused by members of the LGBT community of being supportive of violence against gays and lesbians and bullying. This is furthest from the truth. And I sincerely regret any offense my words have caused. I have consistently said on television, radio, and in print that I am steadfast against bullying. As I wrote on CNN.com, as well as said on the nationally syndicated Dr. Phil show, I believe parents and schools need to take an active role in ending this epidemic that afflicts kids nationwide, gay or not. In fact, I was bullied in school and watched another middle school pull a knife on my father when he boarded our school bus and came to the defense of me and my brother. My position has been unequivocally on this issue and will remain so." And he goes on to say other things, and but he said, my focus has been steadfast and resolute in being a strong voice against such issues. My conviction has always been to speak progressively on issues confronting this country, and I will continue to do so." So it is clear that he did not have this intention. And, you know, most people can say, yeah, we expected him to come out and give some statement. But for the most part, I mean, we know Roland. I mean, again, he's like our cousin, right? I mean, you know, and so you know, we know that he didn't have any malice in his heart about this particular issue.
No.
So, Jimmy, you mentioned CPAC. Let's go there for the last component of the show. CPAC, what was to you so disturbing in CPAC this weekend? I want you to talk a little bit about that.
Well, I could probably tell you what wasn't, but I can tell you then what was.
Okay,
because
go ahead.
What was disturbing was just, I mean, you could just feel the hatred, even through the television. And even when crazy man Herman Cain was on stage, and he decided to call the rest, all of us, stupid because we don't agree with him, and that, you know, then to say that we outnumber them, we're smarter than them, and it's more of us than it is of them. What is that all about? And yet they stand and they talk about this president being a divider and, you know, tearing us apart between the 1% and the 99%, and yet everything they talked about was maintaining that 1%. I did not hear one thing out of that talked about healing, that talked about bringing the country together. I heard taking my country back, which I still don't know exactly what that means and where I fit into that scenario. You know, I have my ideas about where I fit in that scenario, because taking their country back, you have Ron Paul, who disagrees with civil rights and don't think it ought to ever been in place. None of them are talking about voter rights suppression. You know, and yet you've had a Republican person in Maryland arrested for voter fraud, and I think you just had someone in Indiana have, you know, someone arrested and charged with voter fraud both on the Republican side, and so, but yet, you know, they're concerned about voter fraud, and yet they're committing the very act that they say that they're trying to keep in line. So there was just so much rhetoric, and then you had, you know, Sarah Palin, really, why is she still on stage? I mean, really.
Why?
Why does she still have a platform? I haven't figured that out yet. And, but, you know, I guess at the end of the day, they got out of what they want. You know, they were able to rally their quote-unquote base together, and they let Mitt Romney win the straw poll there, and then he, you know, came out on top yesterday in Maine. So I guess they really think he has a better shot of beating Obama than Rick Santorum, which we know Rick Santorum couldn't debate President Obama if he was hypnotized. So, you know, it's beyond me. But it was just so much. It was just so much.
Yeah. Now, so for those of the listeners out there, the CPAC is the Conservative Political Action Conference, and it's this year. It began Thursday, and it's been going. It went over through the weekend, and they had several speakers, and they come out and they try to rally the base, if you will. And so they had a straw poll vote, and of course Mitt Romney came out on top. And this comes on the heels of Rick Santorum winning three states. It was Missouri, it was Colorado, and it was another state that it was involved in a vote over the last couple of days. So on the one hand, Rick Santorum came into the CPAC conference with all this momentum, and then all of a sudden Mitt Romney wins the straw poll and wins Maine. So it still seems like to me that the Republican Party is having some leftover schizophrenia, if you will, with this with this Republican Party here. So, Abby, what do you think is going on here? Why is it that they can't make up their mind as we get closer and closer to the convention?
I'll say one name that comes to mind: Sarah Palin. Everywhere she goes, confusion, miscombobulation, misconceptions happen. Anytime she's involved, it's going to be hell and chaos.
Okay.
I laughed at the whole circumference of it. I've never seen such rowdy white people. I'm sorry.
Well, I have to agree
with you. It was like a Klan meeting. clandestine meeting. Okay, where's the sacrificial Negro that we're going to put on the pole? Oh, my goodness, it's Cain. Gosh.
Okay, serious.
You know what, but it's a lot of dissension in the party because, you know, we have a lot of people, and people may laugh at this and don't believe it is true, that are yet Reaganomics. They still practice the right-wing extremist philosophy of Reaganomics. To them, anybody who's going to run within the Republican camp, because my friend, she's a Republican, if they don't have the type of anomaly as President Ronald Reagan did in that day and time, they said this person is too moderate. This person is not, you know, as to the right as they should be. They're not going to make a good candidate, and they certainly won't win the election. So it's a lot of confusion because there's a lot of different sects. You may have one congregation, and that one congregation begins to break off because they believe this person has a better, you know, philosophy, a better view of this, you know, the secular setting and intersecular setting and things of that. So that's definitely going to be another party split within it. We already had the Tea Party. There's going to be another party split because some of the Gingrich followers who are looking back at his track record, people just don't know. He walked off and left Bush in the mess he was in, literally, and washed his hands scot-free and clean. We've got people still are pulling within the party for Gingrich. And with, you know, Mitt Romney, again, and I've always said this and I'll say it again, he's running on his father's name. He's running on his father's track record because he was the governor of Michigan, and they stated that he is the one that balanced the very deficits of Michigan. So he said that he's going to adopt a lot of his father's philosophies and put them into practice in order to get the economic basis of this country on tack. So you got some Romney followers. Then the rest are kind of like throwing up the pole. They don't know where they're going. That party has no incentive. They have no directives. They don't have a presentational platform. They don't have an agenda. They have no strategy, no plan. But it will be a joke for me to see Mitt Romney get up on the stage, because he can barely speak a credible sentence without looking for words to say and rambling through papers with President Obama. He will then become the monkey of the camp because he cannot stand forward.
No, I was just going to say, I know you were joking about the Klan's meeting and the fact that the sacrificial Negro, but the reality is there was a skit performed this year that deliberately used the word knickers, and I spell phonetically, Kilo November, India Charlie, Kilo Echo Romeo Sierra. Knickers, like the Knickerbockers, they used the word in a context that make it very clear they were invoking a racial slur. So, although there was some jokes about, you know, what you were saying, but the reality is this was not too far from the truth. And so I invite my listeners to go out there and look up the word knickers and look up in the conjunction of CPAC. And look what happened over the weekend. And Jima put it so eloquently when she said we're sleeping on these issues, right? The smokescreen is Cornel West saying that Melissa Harris Perry is a fraud, right, and a fake. The smokescreen is them saying that Roland Martin is against gay and lesbian when he tweets. So, again, Jimmy, you said there's a distraction. There's a lot of distraction that's coming up. But we need to pay very close attention to what's happening on the right. Because it is a fact that when you look at the Republican Party that they're a majority Caucasians. It's not that African Americans don't value some of the Republican views, but when they continue to use the language of against blacks and against poor and against food stamps and talks about the president in the way they do without any logical reality or something that's going to be true in their comments, then we have to beg the question, what is the Republican Party really standing for? You know, I did a segment a couple of shows ago about me looking at the Republican Party from an objective view, but nothing that they do resonates with me and my causes. So I know you were joking, but the reality is we need to pay a close attention because it is true that we could be sleeping on what they're trying to do. And Jimmy, you said it best. We could be end up being in a place that we can't recover from.
That's right.
All right, we're coming up on the end of our show. I want to get some final thoughts. Abby, give me your final thoughts.
It's a very interesting time to be alive, and vigilance is the best weapon against sabotaging, and it allows us to see things just the way they are, not the way that we want them to be. Being active is wonderful, but proactivity gets the job done. Like Jimmy talked about, awakening unto consciousness, not only to consciousness, but reaction with the very level of consciousness in which we foresee and perceive. Thank you.
Have you got anything coming up, any shows coming up, or any causes, anything you're doing?
Oh, yes, definitely. We're going to have an empowerment conference call on the 18th of February. I'm going to be in touch with you on Facebook. Make sure you give me your Facebook address so I can forward that over to you and Jima.
Okay.
And we're going to talk about strategic alignments and how we're going to make sure we're in it to win it by a landslide. We're going to do it again, as the Staples Singer said. So I'm going to make sure I forward you that information for next Saturday the 18th.
Awesome, awesome. Jima, your final comments?
My final comments, not that I'm trying to push a book by Tavis and Dr. Cornel West, but it helps to have your facts. And as Reverend Al Sharpton says often, you know, we can disagree on an array of things, but we cannot disagree on what the facts are. And so the next time you hear someone in your community or someone on television talking about what the president has not done as it relates to Black America, what he hasn't done, anything he said he was going to do on his campaign trail, I just would ask that you go, and if you haven't ever got your copy of the Accountable Making America as Good as It's Promised, then you can go in there and see for yourself exactly what he said he was going to do, and you can take a look at these last 3 years, and you'll see what he has accomplished already. And I just find it interesting that when we talk about, you know, Reverend Sharpton and we talk about these different civil rights organizations, each one of them took a piece of the pie and said, here's what we're going to focus on. And they've done that part. Reverend Sharpton, National Action Network, they took on education. NAACP, they took on criminal justice. National Urban League, they took on the economy and economics and jobs and things of that nature. So they have been at the table all along. We may not like that they're at the table. We may not like when they come out and tell us what they came up with. But at the end of the day, we've got to respect that they're at the table. And then we've got to do what we can do in our own communities. And how can I now go and say, well, what am I doing to ensure that my child's school is doing what it's supposed to do. And I give you one thing. You go to your parent-teacher conference and you show up at a school board meeting. That's how you do what you can do. And we all, if we just all did those little things and find some sort of national organization to become a member of so that you can hear what's really happening and you can answer questions and for yourself as opposed to relying on what the media gives you, because the media gives you a slant. It does not give you the full picture. It gives you just enough to keep you coming back. So find out for yourself. Go do some reading. Please read a book. Read a newspaper. Go get the Wall Street Journal. Read the New York Times. Read a publication and find out what's really being said. And then that way you can make your own informed decision as to whether or not this president is deserving of a second chance.
That was awesome. Okay, so I have a couple of things. One, I want to, first of all, thank the Motor City Maharana for tuning in and joining the conversation. She is such a great commentator. I really am so happy that she joins the show and provides some thought-provoking commentary on the issues. I also want to thank Mr. Motivator for joining us today, too. He has a lot going on, and we think we're going to get coming close to joining the TaylorMade team here pretty soon. So, Mr. Motivator, you're going to be looking for a lot from him coming up in the near future. And, of course, always special thanks to my co-hosts, the wonderful, the magnificent Jima Hill Cook.
Yes, yes.
And don't forget to follow her on Twitter, and that's at Ask Jima. That's AskJema. Now, you're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. I'm your host, Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas, as I do every Sunday at 4 p.m. Central Time, 5 o'clock Eastern. We are the number one resource for small businesses and nonprofit. Now, remember, it's written, my people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge. So stay engaged, stay informed, and stay plugged in to Current Events. We're going to end the show today with a special tribute to Whitney Houston. We really enjoyed all the callers and all the listeners. And a special thanks to JoJo. If you're still out there listening, thank you for calling in and giving us some commentary today. We really appreciate it. And that's our show for today. And we love you, Whitney.
If I should stay, I would only be in your way, so I'll go, but I know I'll think of you every step of the way. And all you dreamed of, and I wish in you joy and happiness, but above all this, I wish you love.
Forever missed. We love you.